Hey, debate fans, this is Steve Healy. I'd feel bad if we didn't say something about our friend Harris Whittles, who died this week. My co-host Dave King would have recorded this for us, but he was feeling a little weird, so I'm speaking on behalf of both of us. Dave knew Harris very well and loved him very much. I knew him the tiniest bit. Everybody in comedy knew him at least a little bit. He was wonderful and hilarious and exciting to be around. Everything you've heard already, a special, special dude. He was also, Harris, was one of the all-time best at this thing, at podcasts. He was so funny, and his voice, literally his voice was funny, and his mind was so interesting, and he just opened himself up in this way that made people feel like they knew him. If you haven't already, let me encourage you to listen to some of those podcasts. My favorite one might be an interview he did on Little Esther's podcast, which is called Weird Adults. Just Harris being funny and cool and interesting and following any idea to its end. Full disclosure, though, Little Esther is Dave King's girlfriend, so whatever, we might be biased. We talked on this show in a debate one time about how you could probably drive to Chicago listening to just Harris Whittles on podcasts. That would be a great, funny drive, entertaining way to spend 18 hours or whatever. Anyone who's interested in the weird thing of podcasts knew who Harris was because he was the best at it. A true loss for the world. But we're lucky to have had him at all, and that he gave so much of it away for free to everybody in this way. Okay, with that, here's a debate. Dan Medina, Dave King, and I recorded a while back, which is about whether the 8th President of the United States, Martin Van Buren, ever received a blowjob.
Welcome back to The Great Debates, friends. It's Dan Medina. I'm moderating this debate. My friends Steve Healy and Dave King have joined me.
Love you, bud.
The Great Debate Studios. We got a fun topic for your consideration today. The topic is this. 8th President of the United States of America, Martin Van Buren, got a blowjob. Steve.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Steve Healy. I want to start off by saying, listen, this debate is probably going to get a little bit tawdry and a little bit bawdy, but it's on a subject that I think is actually really important and kind of an intellectual trapdoor we can use to enter the past in a way we might not get to otherwise. It's very, very hard to explore the private lives of people who lived Van Buren probably died around 1860 or so, and he was probably...
Yeah, he died in 1862.
He was born in 1800?
Yeah, let's just enter a couple of facts.
Okay.
Into the record. This is Dave King. I'll be arguing the con that Martin Van Buren did not get a blowjob. Martin Van Buren was president from 1837 to 1841, and he lived from 1782 until 1862.
Are there any other interesting facts about him?
Oh, many. He was a short man. Mm. He was only 5'6" tall.
Uh-huh.
He spoke Dutch as his first language.
Wow.
Strangely enough, he was the first president who was born as a citizen of the United States, and yet he's the only president for whom English was not his first language.
Huh.
He was a lawyer. He was a Dutch reformed Christian.
Really?
Whatever that means.
A lot of this debate is going to come down to what that reformed was all about.
Yeah, you know, he's from Kinderhook, New York.
Fastidious dresser, right?
Yes, fastidious dresser. He later ran for the presidency as a third party member, unsuccessfully.
He had 4 kids, right?
I believe that's right, yeah.
But his wife died...
He had 5 children.
Oh, 5 kids. And his wife died young, 35 or so.
So his wife died 18 years, I think it was, before he became president. So he was a widower in the White House.
Of his marriage, his wife was pregnant. And the bulk of his life, he was unattached.
Correct. All right. Opening statement, I'll let you continue.
Thanks. I'm going to just start my opening statement from the top.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the puzzle of history, by how we can learn about the past. I went to college. I was a history major. I thought that I would become a history professor before I got sidelined being a professional podcast debater. But in my study of history, and American history specifically, I was fascinated by the fact that the records that we have of the past are so incredibly incomplete
because paper and printing, what comes down to us, those materials were very, very rare and valuable, and what people recorded and wrote down is a very, very tiny slice of life. And yet, nonetheless, we can, by through the work of great historians who've sought out creative new paths and avenues into bringing the past to life, we have a rich picture of the past that still has massive gaps in it, but we can start to realize that the people who lived in the past were not stilted statues. They were living, breathing people with hungers and passions and lust just like us, and they had as many creative and odd ways of expressing and experimenting with that as we do. Now, I would by no means say that I'm an expert on 19th century New York City, but I'm pretty good. I read that book, Gotham, cover to cover, because I was trying to write a novel about the history of New York. Boring why I read it, but listen, I know a lot about the history of New York. Let me paint a picture for you.
Please, yeah, get to something.
1830, a prostitute named Helen Jewett is murdered in New York City. There's a trial of her alleged killer. And what emerges from the newspapers and the accounts we have of that trial is that prostitution was a highly understood, recognized, permissible part of life in New York City. Young men that were starting to come to the city for the first time, they would go and visit prostitutes. This was tolerated. The police would protect legitimate brothels. There were all kinds of categories of brothels. When the accused murderer of Martin Jewett was found guilty, there was a riot. Because the people were like, hey, he's just a guy who loves prostitutes like everybody else. Let this guy off. Now, listen, this is just a fragment of life. But that's how history works. We try and extrapolate from these fragments. So what we know is that Martin Van Buren, who was a successful politician, a machine politician, a famous people person, coming through New York City in exactly the time of the Jewett trial, was living in a venal, primal world where he could express himself sexually. He was living a vivid sexual life. He impregnated his wife five times. And then he lived the rest of his life totally single because he was a widower. I think he got blown constantly. Constantly. We're talking about one of the most charming men of his era in a time when America is practically ripping open with sexual freedom. Do you think the president of the United States at that time, the governor of New York, a guy who ran the state, ran the city, wasn't sampling the wares on offer? Of course Martin Van Buren got a blowjob. Of course he did.
Of course he didn't, and I'll tell you why. This isn't the story of Martin Van Buren. This is the story of the blowjob. Healy, someone once recently told me about the a story of Captain Bligh on the HMS Bounty. The year is 1798.
Oh, I'm kind of interested in the Bounty story.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
When Captain Bligh arrived on the island of Tahiti at the turn of the 19th century.
Are you sure it was Tahiti?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
He wrote in his journals, and I'm paraphrasing here, you would not believe the things that these Tahitian women do. These women will take our members and put them in their mouths, and they will please us until we issue our pollution, and they will consume that pollution.
Wow.
All this is to say, the blowjob, as rampant as prostitution was, as acceptable as it was, as ingrained as it was in American society, the blowjob was not part of American society. The blowjob did not become something that women performed on men until, I believe, the 20th century. And even to that end, the mid-20th century, it was not something that it's not something that men sought out. It's not something that men were even aware of or desired. It became something much later than that. I have no problem conceding all of these facts to you that New York and Washington itself, brothels, of course, absolutely ran rampant. In fact, Gore Vidal wanted to make a movie about, I don't know if you know this, he was really into the tawdrier side of Lincoln. And he wanted to make a movie that embraced the, like, he wanted to paint Washington, D.C. in Lincoln's time as basically, like, almost a dirty Vegas where everything was, where he was going to prostitutes and brothels were on every street corner, and it was an accepted part of the society.
That sounds great.
But, I mean, you could learn, certainly, like, through the lens of prostitution, we can learn a lot about history. Prostitutes used to be on the payroll on military bases. They were listed as laundry women sometimes or cleaning women. Sure. But it was an understood, I'm sure you know, this was an understood part of society that they would render services unto the soldiers. But one thing they weren't doing until the mid-20th century was giving blowjobs. And Martin Van Buren lived only until 1862. I'm assuming he probably couldn't get it up for the last 6 or 7 years of his life. Conservatively. So I don't see him possibly getting to a time in American history where he would have sought out oral sex. Well, those are the facts, and there's just no getting around it.
Okay, the only fact that I've really heard is the Bly account, right? Which actually is in his log book, not his private diary. So he's writing to the British Royal Navy. Okay. That's one thing. So he's probably trying to cover his ass.
How do you know more about this Bly account than I do?
But let's further note that Bly was a famous prig. Like, the reason we know about him at all is because there was a mutiny, because everybody else in the ship is like, this guy sucks. So they stuck around in Tahiti, rounded up some ladies, and kept having the blowjob party that they were loving.
Certainly the hardest, even the harshest prig, prude, whatever you want to call him, is at least going to be aware of what fellatio
Where
was.
Where would he have learned that? He became a cabin boy when he was like 8.
From the proves the point. If you're a cabin boy when you're 8 and there's allegedly men all around you getting oral sex from women on every island from every prostitute, then you would at least would have heard of it.
Bly was the
You would have said, not for me, I'm better than this, but you wouldn't be so dumbfounded as to write in the whatever it was, wherever he wrote
it's
it.
It's hard for me to think of a modern equivalent, but listener, I'm sure that you have someone in your workplace who is insanely technical, insanely boring. They can get the job done, and the bosses know that if you hire them to do something, they won't be distracted by their own pleasure. That's what Bly was and who he was. So once again, we're coming back to this issue of context. I mean, what we know from Bly really is that every society is going to think up the blowjob, from the Tahitian islands to the city of New York in 1830. Now, Martin Van Buren,
that's not true,
is a representation. What he is in history is a representation of the bursting forth of American spirit. He's one of the first true street politicians to become president of the United States. His ally was Andrew Jackson, who'd been fighting his way across New Orleans and Florida in the 1820s.
You don't think he'd
heard of the blowjob? Of course he had. And he's an experimental guy, an interesting guy. He transitioned from the Dutch culture to the American culture. Of course he's going to try this out. Plus, let's remember, the Dutch are famously sexually experimentational.
But he was a Dutch American,
sure,
and the Dutch currently have a reputation as being certainly, yes, now every college kid knows that Amsterdam is where you go if you want to see.
So in the 1600s, it was New Amsterdam, a city crawling with brothels.
I have another piece of evidence.
Please.
I'd like to enter, just in terms of the history of sexuality in this country. In 1926, Theodore Vandeveld published a book called Ideal Marriage, Its Physiology and Technique, and it was an interesting book about, like, physical relations between a man and a woman.
Okay.
The book was notable for its discussion of the genital kiss as a form of marital foreplay.
Uh-huh.
This is 1926.
Right.
And people were unfamiliar. This is one of the first accounts in American history. He had to introduce people to the idea of a woman putting...
He had to reintroduce the idea.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, it's very possible that the blowjob was rampant who knows when. Even in the Middle Ages, people were
going to buy a book about... This is for the timid and the nervous. Van Buren was not that. He was bold and forthright and foregoing. He was walking the streets of New York, living the adventurous life of a great politician. He didn't need a book to tell him what kind of sexual pleasure to try out. He saw it himself.
But the idea, Healy, we're not talking about Van Buren per se. What I'm talking about is the act of fellatio is not something that 19th and certainly 18th century American men were even aware of as a desire.
Let's say that just human memory is erased and 30 adult humans are on like a desert island,
okay.
Men and women. How long do you think it's going to take them to think of the idea of putting their penis in somebody else's mouth? A day? 2 days?
But
you know that that's going to happen almost immediately.
But Healy, what happened was that it was popular for a while in the middle. But this is true.
You consider yourself sort of a historian of the blowjob?
I consider myself a guy who's done a very small amount of research on this in the 2 minutes before we debated,
okay.
And then as much as I can while we're talking.
Right.
It seems like people, I mean, obviously there's like ancient art where, you know, that depicts blowjobs and fellatio and all that kind of thing.
Right. It's like painted on the walls.
Sure. But then something happened around, like it was very popular in the Renaissance,
uh-huh.
Okay? And then after that, and don't forget, by the way, that America was founded on like a puritanical ideal of restraint.
In a way, but it was modeled on Greece and Rome. These guys were all familiar with the classical
world. Government was modeled on Greece and Rome. It doesn't mean that they were having butt sex with each other. Just because their government was modeled, they didn't wear togas, Healy. Just because they modeled their democracy after Greece and Rome didn't mean they embraced every single aspect of it.
You think they love democracy, but the blowjob they put in the no thanks category.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think what sexual mores of the time dictated that sort of activity was no longer acceptable.
I disagree.
No longer desired.
Remember at that time that contraception was much more difficult to get. I think the blowjob was, if anything, probably more prevalent back then.
And what's your evidence to prove this?
My evidence is, I'm not drawing on historical evidence, I'm drawing on common sense here.
And you think that common sense is that men like blowjobs?
I think...
That's crazy.
I think all humans everywhere like sexual experimentation.
But, you know, that is true, but Healy...
And in a bursting forth new democracy, where new ideas are swimming about all over the place, when some of the first cities to arise in the new world, that is going to be at the forefront of people's minds.
These things ebb and flow. The things that are considered desirable at one point in history become passé or commonplace at another time. And the things that become, like, unheard of somehow become desired at another time. And so, for example, anal sex used to be something that no man even thought about wanting at all. It was not something you would never consider. Now, like, if you look at the history of... I saw an article about... excuse me, the history of the prices of different sexual acts that prostitutes have offered in the last 100 years or so.
Okay.
Basically, anal sex has replaced oral sex as the most expensive thing.
I mean, there's no way that you can think this study has any kind of serious validity, or how would you possibly gather this information?
Well, as you yourself said, the prostitution has been an ingrained part of our society for centuries. And as best as we can tell, there are records of the prices that people paid for different sexual acts. There are literally menus of brothels that go back to the early 20th century, the mid-20th century. And what we find is that through most of the 20th century, or in the middle of the 20th century, the act that was the most expensive was oral sex. It was fashionable. It had just become the kind of thing you yourself said that a housewife in the middle of the 20th century would never give her husband a blowjob. It was unheard of.
I think you're conflating historical eras in a way that's really dangerous. I mean, Martin Van Buren is as far from the early 20th century as we are from that guy writing the book about the ideal marriage.
I'm not entering this as evidence for Martin Van Buren's era. What I'm saying is that certain sexual acts come and go in terms of being either totally unheard of, totally undesired, and then super expensive and fashionable, and then blasé, commonplace. That's what the history of the blowjob in America is. For the first 150 years of this country or more, it was something people didn't do. Men did not even care for it. They didn't want it. Exhibit A being Captain Bly. And then
Captain Bly didn't want it, but the other guys on the ship wanted it so bad that they shipped it out.
It wasn't available to them.
Grabbed some Tahitian ladies and kept rolling.
The blowjob became popular in the middle of the 20th century. It became the thing that men went to prostitutes for. It became the most expensive item on the menu. And then sometime in the later 20th century, it became not necessarily commonplace, but became something that was no longer taboo or something that you only had to go to a prostitute for, and the prices of fellatio receded. And now anal sex is the most expensive
thing. I think you've taken us back only as far as, say, 1900, and admirable work on the history of prostitution that's kind of fascinating and interesting. It's an interesting historical question whether, for some reason, in the middle of the 20th century, the blowjob went out of style, or just sexuality in general just became something that people didn't talk about publicly. What we know is that there was an explosion of sexuality in urban areas in the early 19th century, the areas Martin Van Buren was traveling through. We know he was a single guy. We know he was an open-minded person.
How do you know Martin Van Buren was an open-minded person? Where are you getting this from?
I'm getting it from the reports we have from his life, from the way he conducted himself.
You're pulling this out of the air. That's simply a product of the time. It has nothing to do with his personality.
Look, I wish that I knew more about Martin Van Buren.
We all wish we knew more about Martin Van Buren.
I think we're doing a service bringing that up. But what we do know about him from the limited research we've done is that he was garrulous, friendly.
You haven't brought up anything that shows that that's true.
You know about the Bucktails, right?
No, tell us.
Okay.
Regale us.
He was basically the head of a political machine called the Bucktails. That was sort of his... He was one of the first machine politicians to rise to success. What do you need to do that? You need to be socially...
Well-organized. You need to be productive. You need to put your nose down and do the work.
You need to compromise.
You need to keep your dick out of women's
mouths. New ideas. That's what he was doing.
I think all of that is so circumstantial. I think the listener knows that you're stretching. Just to say, here, Healy, listen to the leaps that you're asking the listener to make. He was a leader of the Bucktails, therefore he was garrulous, therefore he was open to new ideas, therefore he got a blowjob? That's insane.
Why is that insane? What percentage of urban politicians in New York today do you think have had blowjobs?
Oh, near 100.
Yeah, I think it was probably the same in 1830.
I disagree. Here's what I would say.
I think prostitution was more common then.
Oh,
it
certainly
was more socially accepted.
Healy,
then.
No, but Healy, you keep going on the same path. Prostitution does not equal fellatio in the turn of the 19th century America.
I think in an age without contraception, it was a very valid and valuable option.
And you have no evidence that shows that that's the case.
My whole point is that our resources in terms of historical evidence are limited, so we have to extrapolate from what we have. And what we have is a lot of signs pointing us to, here's this incredible, engaging, alpha kind of dude, Martin Van Buren, and here is a society exploding with sexual freedom.
I think both of those are two equally two equally unsubstantiated claims that you're making.
Listener,
I mean, I could easily say, here's a guy whose ambitions in politics from an early age, he had ambitions to be in politics. He was president of the United States. He was governor of New York. The last thing he wanted to do was to be caught in a compromising position.
It would have been impossible for him. But he was such a forward-thinking guy that he could picture that.
Making that up.
What do you
have no evidence that he was in any way forward-thinking.
I know he was born a farm boy speaking Dutch, and he became the president of the United States. He's one of the most incredible men who ever lived.
He also was, if you look at pictures of him, hideous. And here's what I think. Excuse me, if I may. I don't think there was any woman in this country who would put her mouth around his penis before he was president because he was so ugly. And I think once he was president, I think he was probably, it seems to me to have been a responsible, by the book, do your job person. And I don't think
he was also ex-president for a long time. Which is just him traveling around receiving honors and so forth.
No, it's absolutely not true. In fact, if you know anything about the history of Martin Van Buren, you know that his ex-presidency was as motivated by politics as his pre-presidency.
He couldn't get away
No, he couldn't get away from his country.
From
he couldn't
the campaign
get away.
Trail.
He was convinced that he was going
the
to
thrill
be.
Thrill of the hustings.
You know what's interesting about Martin Van Buren? He was so convinced that he was going to be the Democratic nominee, and I believe the year was 1844.
Mm-hmm.
And then a private letter of his emerged.
Oh, no.
Wherein I forget exactly the circumstances, but it had something to do with Texas, and I believe it was something about slavery. It was something about the pro-slavery Democrats would no longer support him after this private letter became public, and it torpedoed his chance of presidency. The point being this.
What would we do for the
He didn't get out of the office. Once he got out of office, he was not the type who was going to, he was not, you know,
So he was more
George
of a Bill
W.
Clinton
Bush
type.
Model.
He stayed active. Is that what you're saying?
I guess
he's more Bill Clinton.
Really,
than
more the Teddy Roosevelt type. More the guy who continued to run for president after his presidency.
Yeah.
More the William Howard Taft.
The guy
type.
Who loved the
who
action
became,
and thrill.
Who became a supreme what do you call it, Supreme Court justice. Yeah, yeah. He stayed in government. He stayed serving the people. He didn't
loved
serve his own member.
And
Healy, again, you're reaching so far. You said. He had such a long time as an ex-president, as if to imply
okay,
that he was out.
Your evidence so far has been the thing about Bly.
Yes.
Which I think I demolished. Then it's been some menu of prostitution that you read that has nothing to do with the historical era we're talking about.
My point is that menu post-dates the era we're talking about. And it is exemplary of the rise of the blowjob and the decline of the blowjob. And the era we're talking about predates the rise of the blowjob.
I think you're making a big mistake to assume that these things aren't up and down, that they're linear rather than ebb and flow. And I think we were at a flow. A flow was going on in the time of Martin Van Buren.
I think
it's
time
era.
For closing arguments.
Of course. Listen, I'm going to wrap this up very quickly. Listener, I just ask you to go out there and look at the daguerreotypes and the photographs of Martin Van Buren. Look at the paintings of his wife. What's her name? Hannah Hose?
Her name was Hannah Hose. It's amazing.
Look at that. Think about the love that they shared, the loneliness that filled his later years, and yet the prestige, the honor that flowed his way as president of the United States and thereafter, and the love, the passion he had for engaging in political combat, for engaging with people, and for being out there on the campaign trail, one of the most sexually explosive environments in the world. And tell me that Martin Van Buren didn't try a little bit of everything.
Healy, Martin Van Buren very well may have tried a little bit of everything. The problem is that at the time, everything did not include putting your penis into the mouth of a woman and receiving a blowjob. This was a part of American history where the act of fellatio was not popular. And on top of that, I don't believe that Martin Van Buren was the type of man to seek out all of these sexual perversions to the extent that you claim he was. I don't know where you're getting that from. I don't know what evidence we have that Martin Van Buren, Lil Van, the 8th president of the United States, was in any way an experimenter, a pervert, a deviant. I think Martin Van Buren was a family man. I think he was happy to have standard missionary sex and call it a day. And I think all of the evidence, not only of the man, but of the time, leads us to the same conclusion. And that is why Martin Van Buren never, sadly, I would add, sadly, never got a blowjob. I think that's the end of the debate. Thanks, everyone.
Great job, debaters.
Medeans, what do you think?
Dave, the problem with your argument is that it rests on the idea that blowjobs weren't being given at that time. And I feel that you didn't convince me that if they did exist, that Van Buren didn't get them, wouldn't have sought them out, and therefore I just feel like it's too unlikely. He's kind of right. A penis obviously goes in the mouth.
Yeah, but, well,
on
you
that
know what?
Note.
He's probably right.
Look, man, you want Van Buren to have gotten a blowjob.
We're all rooting for the historical fact that Martin Van Buren got a blowjob. And let me add, at a time after his wife passed away and, like, on a date, on his fifth date with a woman who was also pleasured by Martin Van Buren, I hope Martin Van Buren, you know, gave as much as he received in the sexual department.
He gave as much to his country as he received, that's for sure.
We can both agree on that. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Hey, guys, you can find us on the internet at greatdebates69.com, greatdebates69 at gmail.com, and at greatdebates69 when you're there on Twitter. Give us a shout out. Give us some feedback. Send us some thoughts and send us some topics and vote on who you think won this and every debate. We'll see you next time.